Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the punch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the 2008 NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
We're alive. We're still alive. 3 more games to play in the regular season, and the Pats are still very much in the think of things, as well as the thick of things, both things, in the AFC East and the AFC in particular. We welcome you inside the playbook for a Tuesday. My name is John Rook. Webradio at Patriots.com. It's the same email address. That's how you reach us on the program. The telephone number, 508-543-7482. After the win over Seattle, I have to admit it was certainly a little closer than I think we probably all imagined it would be. But when you consider the injury story that continues to make a name for itself here, I mean, frankly, the fact that the Patriots are where they are is a story unto itself right now, kids. This is, I think we mentioned this for the first time maybe about a month or so ago. And correct me if I'm wrong here, and I'm sure many of you will, because a lot of you do, and that's fine, because quite frankly, when you're speaking off the cuff a lot of times like I do, sometimes you kind of mangle things from time to time, and you need a little helpful reminder, and that's good. That's why we rely on you to do that. But I believe we did mention this for the first time about a month ago, that this may be Bill Belichick's best coaching job. If this team does win out somehow and wins these last 3 games, and I'm beginning to think now more and more that not this week, but next week against Arizona is going to be a heck of a lot tougher than I think most people realize right now. Maybe we'll be talking more about this a week from now, but I'm not relishing that game. This may be their best coaching job ever, especially if they finish 11-5 and win the division. There are many candidates, I think, overall for coach of the year. Certainly Tony Sperano of Miami has to be there. I believe that, I think for whatever it's worth, if they win the East, Eric Mangini has to be there. You could certainly look at Baltimore. You could certainly look at the comeback for Indianapolis. I think you could even probably throw Mike Shanahan and Denver in the mix to a certain extent. But, you know, coach of the year? Yeah. Absolutely. We're 3 weeks away from the regular season wrapping up, and you're still in the hunt, and that's all you can ask for at this stage of the game. Let's do this right off the top of the program today, okay, just as I'm talking about coaching jobs in particular. If not Bill Belichick, who in your estimation has done a better job with his team, in your opinion, so far this year? And if it is Bill Belichick, then say so. But if you had a vote for Coach of the Year and you were told you need to submit your ballot today, who are you voting for? I think you can make a strong case for Coach Belichick. And there's really, again, there's no wrong answer here. I'm continually impressed by the way these guys, you know, mix and match and game plan and, you know, smoke and mirror. And let's face it, it's remarkable. It's remarkable. So anyway, that's the first thing I want to throw out at you today. Webradio at Patriots.com. If not Bill Belichick, who's your coach of the year thus far? You are told by NFL.com, let's say, for instance, you need to submit your ballot today. Who are you voting for? You got 14 weeks of the regular season complete. Who's your coach of the year after 14 weeks? So there you go. That's your question. And I would love for you to provide some feedback on that in particular. And we got a couple of the things that we're going to throw out today. But Brian Lowe from Patriots Today is scheduled to join us from San Jose, California, in the 3 o'clock hour to bring us up to date on everything that's going on out in Patriots Nation in Northern California as the Pats get ready for the Oakland Raiders this Sunday. So if anything is happening with the team, and the coaches, media, what have you. He's going to bring us up to date in 3 o'clock hour today. He's going to check in with us here on the show. So we'll get the latest from B-Lo. If you have a question for B-Lo out there, we can even call it a segment, Ask B-Lo. Why not? Ask B-Lo today. Something about the Patriots out in California. Go ahead and fire off a question for Ask B-Lo as well. If you have something on the team from out in California, webradio@patriots.com. Ask B-Lo. There you go. So if you want to do that for him, we can do that for him as well in our 3 o'clock hour of the program today. There is some news to tell you about before we jump into sort of recapping and nitpicking, as we always do here on Nitpick Tuesdays inside the playbook, as we recap the 24-21 win over the Seattle Seahawks on Sunday. But I did want to jump out at least first and give you these two news stories. And as I just mentioned with the Fred and the guys a couple of moments ago, it is official that the recession has hit the National Football League as of today, because the league said this morning it is cutting more than 10% of its headquarters staff in response to the downturn in the nation's economy. The cuts were announced in a memo to league staff by Commissioner Roger Goodell. This is according to a news release that I actually received from the National Football League a little over an hour ago. The league is eliminating about 150 of its staff of 1,100 personnel in New York, at the NFL Films headquarters in New Jersey, and in production facilities in Los Angeles. Commissioner Goodell said these were difficult and painful steps, but necessary in the current economic environment. Now, I think we all realize that the NFL has certainly been at the top of the pedestal in symbolizing the wealth, the money that is out there in the world of professional sports on our planet. But the NFL now has decided, well, you know, things may be going well, but it's not going so well for everybody else. I'm not convinced, because you notice now they're not giving us any numbers. Usually, when someone has a bad story to tell you, they want to verify, they want to back up that bad story with the available facts that they have so they can legitimize it. You're not going to take anybody's word. We're all in a show-me world here. It's like we all live in Missouri, right? You know, show me. Well, usually when people have bad news to say and it's legit, they're going to back it up with numbers. I don't see the NFL backing this up with any numbers. How are their revenues down? They're down from 7 gazillion to 6 gazillion? They're still making money hand over foot. This is in my estimation. The problem here is that because NASCAR, because the NBA, and to a lesser extent Major League Baseball are all showing losses or showing downturns or talking about sponsors leaving or what have you, that the NFL felt that they had to go along here. This is not the time to be, you know, touting how rich we are and how successful we are, and this is not time to rub people's faces in the, you know, in the dirt. This is time to, you know, go along with the mainstream in this country, and this is time to show that, you know, hey, we too are susceptible to economic conditions, and, you know, if others are cutting back, we should be cutting back as well. This is my opinion. I don't have, you know, a lot of fact. This is just based on what I've witnessed. And like I said, the first thing that cued me onto this earlier this afternoon was, okay, where are the numbers? I'd love to see where the National Football League is behind in their expenses and their as opposed to their revenues, or in the revenues as opposed to their expenses. Maybe we won't get those numbers until the end of the season, until everything is completed. I'm not sure. I'm not convinced right now that we'll ever get those numbers, just because the NFL is kind of like, you know, they're throwing dirt on this. It's kind of like, all right, we're going to make some cuts so we can kind of like go along with everybody else here. You ever heard the saying, misery loves company? I really believe this to be the case. Now, the NFL may be, I will allow, having some financial difficulties. The league office, that is. It's possible. But like I said, you know, when you're making, you know, when you're printing money, which is what the NFL basically has been doing for the better part of the last decade to two decades now, but certainly in the last decade, and, you know, others around you are having difficulty, I think that if you have a social conscience, a social bone in your body, you try to do what you can to help others. Now, in some twisted way, that may be what this is. I don't know how you're helping anybody by laying off 150 people. But maybe what you're doing is you're showing the world that, hey, you know what? We're human too. What are your thoughts? You agree or disagree with this particular premise about the NFL? And in professional sports in particular, I mean, we've seen where, you know, NASCAR teams are talking about, you know, not even coming back next year because they can't guarantee sponsorship. I refuse to believe that, you know, the downturn in the economy is going to do anything to remotely affect free agency in Major League Baseball, because, you know, we got the baseball winter meetings going on right now in Las Vegas, and, you know, I'm sure that, you know, the high-priced guys are still going to get what they can get. There may be a few of the middle to lower-end free agents struggle to, you know, make their $1 million or whatever it might be. But I just don't know that Major League Baseball is going to take a huge hit. I certainly don't think that the NFL is going to take a huge hit, even with these layoffs that they announced today. The NBA, I can see where they're taking a hit because they've been slowly taking a hit. They've been slowly sliding, I think, for the better part of the last 5, 6, 7 years. You know, it's the old, the players, they don't relate to the average everyday fan anymore. It's part of it. It's a punk league, and, you know, we're not a punk crowd. And I think a lot of that has adversely affected the NBA. So the NBA, I would say, is going to be close to with NASCAR and maybe a few other things in this country in terms of attempting to, weather the storm. I think we're seeing it in Major League Soccer already, those of you that actually follow the Revolution as well. I mean, I saw today where Michael Parkhurst, who's a local kid from Cranston, Rhode Island, he's being allowed to go play for a Danish club team in Europe next year. Why? Well, probably because, you know, number one, he wanted to. But number two, it's kind of like, well, this relieves us of some potential salary and responsibility and having to re-sign him because his deal was up this year. And so it's going to hit everybody here, kids. It's going to hit everybody. It may have already hit you. So I'd really kind of like, you know, in a general sense here, to find out how you feel about the downturn in the economy affecting what you do as a sports fan. Are you buying less? Are you watching less? Are you listening less? Are you following less? In what ways? How has the downturn of the economy affected you as a Patriots fan, as a football fan? Webradio@patriots.com. You can also phone in at 508-543-7482. I would really be curious to know that because it's affected me. As many of you know, this is my 8th year here to host this program for the Patriots on this website. It's my 16th year as a contract employee for the team. And, you know, it's obviously the downturn in the economy has affected this very department with Mike Parenti and Gary Gradecki and those who have, you know, contributed to this program in the past, being a part of the marketing cuts here, you know, a few weeks ago here at Gillette Stadium. So it certainly affected us here. In my own professional life, as I'm a full-time contractor, I work for myself, and I've had one client go bust on me within the last 6 calendar months, and he can't pay me any longer and owes me a lot of money. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. No, it's not the Patriots. But what I'm saying here, though, is that it's affected everybody in some form or fashion. Has it affected my viewing or consumption habits of sports? Not yet. But I can see where it might. You know, I subscribe to the DirecTV, sports package. You know, and if you always look to cut costs, I mean, I realize it's only $10 a month or whatever it is, you know, to add on. But still, you know, if you need to cut costs, that's an easy one to do. We all kind of watch ESPN or, you know, stuff like that anyway for a lot of games. Now, of course, a lot of my stuff is a tax write-off because of what I do for a living. I have to follow as much as I humanly possibly can because it's my business to do that. Great job to have, you can get it, right? Well, it also has its, you know, downside as well. There are, you know, I mean, buying tickets, I could certainly see where you don't buy as many tickets because you just don't have as much, you know, discernible income, discretionary income in order to go out and be able to do things the way you've done. So I want to know how the downturn in the economy is affecting you in terms of being a sports fan, in terms of being a Patriots fan, in terms of being a football fan. How is it affecting you? Webradio@patriots.com. All right, there's two good questions I hope that you can chew on for a bit, and I will look forward in earnest to receiving your answers and sharing some of the emails with you here on the program. In addition to how the downturn in the economy is affecting you as a football, as a Patriots, as a sports fan, at this stage of the game, if you could vote for a coach of the year in the NFL, who would it be and why? You're told you got to turn in your ballot today. Who's your coach of the year? Lots of good candidates here. I'd be curious to see what your choice might be when you consider what we're going through around here in terms of trying to keep players healthy. Anybody got any linebacking experience? Coach Belichick called for it yesterday. You know, they're going to be looking at players. They're going to be looking at people. I mean, they got to get through the year. I think it's an absolute stunner that these guys keep dropping the way that they have been dropping. It's just, it absolutely is just, it's just nothing short of amazing, really. So if you know of any good linebackers out there, I'll take some suggestions, and I'll fire them off to Fred and the gang, and we'll fire them off upstairs as well, and who knows, maybe somebody will take a look. But you got any good names out there of street free agents that might be available? I think that they might be interested. You never know. By the way, just this other little bit of news today I wanted to share with you because this is a subject that we've dealt with in the past here on this program, and I know that this has been a point of contention with the Players Association, within the NFL, especially the Retired Players Association, because they've actually gone out and sued the NFLPA for what they think is a lack of benefits and a lack of attention paid to some of the retired players. It's been a big story in the league if you follow the league closely at all. But the NFL and the NFL Players Association today announced a new benefit program that is going to assist retired players with their Medicare costs. So this is definitely a step in the right direction. You know, trying to give you a little, if I've got to give you the bad news, I'm trying to give you a little good news too. It just can't all be bad around here, right? The latest in a series of NFL initiatives addressing the medical needs of retired players. It's a new program that's going to pay a portion of the premium for an eligible player's coverage. It's called the NFL Player Care Plan. It'll contribute $100 a month or $100 toward the monthly premium of each eligible retired player. Okay, it doesn't sound like a lot, but apparently Richard Berthelsen, who is the acting executive director of the NFLPA, obviously taking over for Gene Upshaw, says that this is a benefit that's been being worked on for a long time and that they're pleased that they can do this for the retired players in the NFL. By the way, retired NFL players can also find additional information on medical and benefits programs at NFLPlayerCare.com. So if you wanted to find out more about that, you could do so as well by going to that particular website. So I wanted to bring that up because when I saw that story today, I'm thinking, well, you know what? There's some good news. When you see the retired players, you know, convene and guys can barely walk, you know, it's just crushing to think that your heroes of days gone by, my heroes from days gone by, are left basically to do what they may without getting any apparent help from the league, a league that they literally gave their bodies for, their health for, their long-term health for. It's a step in the right direction. It's not complete, but it is a step in the right direction. So kudos to the NFL for moving that along and getting that deal done for the retired players in the league. All right, some news and notes from the recap over the Seahawks on Sunday. 24-21 win for the Pats. One of those kind of, you know, breathing easy type of reactions to the game. You know, I think we all kind of sweated that one out a little bit, did we not? I know that there was a point in time in the third quarter when I'm thinking, they're not going to do this. Literally, I thought that in about midway through the third quarter. They're not going to do this. And then I kept thinking, well, they can do this if they get just one more, you know. And so I got kind of stuck between believing they could do it and trying to prepare myself for the inevitable, which, of course, over the last 3 weeks of the regular season here with you on this program would be, let's look toward the draft in April because the playoffs ain't happening. And then in a matter of about 20 minutes, not only did the Patriots win, but the Jets lose, and obviously the Dolphins won as well. And so now you have a three-way tie for the lead of the AFC East. Everybody's 8-5. Technically, the Jets still hold the tiebreaker because they're better within the division by a half game over the Patriots right now. So that's why the Jets, you see, in terms of playoff teams, if they were to start today and you see all these things, you see the Jets always slotted in, you know, as that four seed or as or three seed and AFC East champion because they hold the lead right now in the first tiebreaker, which is division. Next tiebreaker would be first tiebreaker is head-to-head. Second tiebreaker would be division. Third tiebreaker would be conference. So those are things that we're going to be looking at very closely over the course of the next 3 weeks. Right? Yeah, absolutely. So start figuring it out for yourselves. You know, I was going to do this before the show today, and quite frankly, I held off because I figured somebody in this audience has already done this, and I want to give you a chance to step up right here, right now, and show me what you've done, and you'll get full credit for it. What are the schedules on down the end of the season here for the three contending teams in the AFC East? Pats, Jets, Dolphins. Who's got who? What are the not only divisional records, but what are the conference records? Because the conference record, to me, is probably going to end up being the tiebreaker. That's what I think it's going to come down to. Third tiebreaker, at best, is probably where this division title is going to be decided. So if anybody's done that homework or if anybody cares to do that homework while we're here on the program, by all means, everybody's going to get credit for it. I just thought I'd give you an opportunity to do that because I figured somebody has probably already done it. I just haven't had the chance to do that today, but it certainly is on my mind, and I'm thinking, okay, I know where the division records stand. What about the conference records? Where are we going with that? Well, that's something that I think we have to start paying attention to. I'm thinking basically primarily three things that stand out in my mind from the win over Seattle, and then we'll get into some nitpicks for you, and then I want you to share your nitpicks last and certainly not least via email today. See, we got a bunch of stuff to talk about today on the program, giving you an opportunity to chew on just about anything. So I really hope today that you'll participate because this will be a great chance to get some issues and some some answers, hopefully ruminating around in the dark, deep recesses of our minds here. I'm thinking three things that really stand out about the game on Sunday. Number one, Wes Welker is the man. I think we all realize that, and by the way, there's no better nickname right now going on than the slot machine. Is that great? Is that a great nickname? It's outstanding. Who's going to give me a dollar for calling him the slot machine? Anybody give me a dollar? Getting back here in the stadium. Castle pass complete to the slot machine. Oh, listen, guy's unbelievable. If there is an MVP candidate, in my mind, Wes Welker is it. He has to be. He has literally and figuratively and physically kept this Patriots offense afloat with his catches, with his gutty, gritty play, with his bouncing back from that unbelievable hit he took last week, you know, by Pittsburgh. The guy to me is, he epitomizes what I think a most valuable player should be. Now, will he get the award? I doubt it. But he could. He leads the NFL right now in receptions. Why not Wes Welker? I think that's a question we should ask here over the course of the next 3 weeks. Why not Wes Welker for MVP? I'll start it right now. If you want to jump aboard, I'll get right on that bandwagon with you. I'll lead the charge. 12 catches, 134 yards, according to the highest reception total of the season for the team, the second highest reception total of his career. He also caught the two-point conversion pass, which gave the Patriots a little breathing room at the end, obviously, as we all realize, in the fourth quarter. The 12 catches trail only his 13-catch performance against Philadelphia last season. His 12 is the ties the fifth now, fifth highest single-game total in team history, behind Troy Brown's team record 16 catches. Remember that day back in September of 2002? And there are three 13-catch performances in Patriots history. Welker against Philly last year, Deion Branch and in 02, and Terry Glenn in 99. So he has the fourth one. The 134 receiving yards, the highest game total by a Patriot this season, and the most since Moss had 135 against Pittsburgh last year. Wes Welker should be the MVP. That's the first thing I think that I'm thinking here in retrospect of the win over Seattle. Number two, the defense cannot stop running water. I think we all realize that. When Vince Wilfork went down, I think we realized how valuable he really is to that defense. And again, with all due respect to Mike Wright and to Lakeven Smith, you know, and to anybody else who would play tackle, you know, those guys are good players. They're not Vince Wilfork. And I don't think that's being mean. I don't think that's being mean-spirited. I don't think that's being terrible. I think it's being truthful. Vince Wilfork is truly an anchor, if not the anchor, of whatever the Patriots have on defense. And depending upon, you know, what the injury report says this week, missing him for any extended amount of time, maybe the rest of the year, who knows right now, that's a blow. That's as bad a blow as this team has had just short of Tom Brady. You know, the rumors have it, continue to persist, that Teddy Bruschi is going to be out for the year. And again, we haven't had that confirmed as of yet here. We do know, again, that he's flown back home to have his knee looked at. It stands to reason he could at least be out for a while. Hopefully it's a bruise. Hopefully it's somebody he can bounce back from. But, you know, we don't know at this stage of the game. Probably won't start knowing officially until later today or tomorrow. And Coach Belichick said as much yesterday. You know, it usually takes a day or two for these sort of things to sort of cycle themselves in and out as guys get treatment and guys sort of respond to that treatment and have a chance to, you know, lay off for a couple of days and see how the dings, you know, heal up. I got to tell you, the second thing, I'm thinking three things about the game. The first thing was Wes Welker. The second thing is the defense not being able to stop anything. The third thing I'm thinking about Sunday that really stands out to me is that the senior set rules. Let's face it. To have what Junior Seau and Roosevelt Colvin, and I'm kind of throwing Rosie in there, but you know he's not a almost 40-something like Junior is. I, for one, as someone who is on the far plus side of the age of 40, I'm thrilled to death to see this. I realize that this is not the future of this football team. I realize that these guys probably don't have a future with this team after this season is completed even. I mean, who knows? The amazing thing to me is that these guys come from not having played a single down of football all season long. And they come in and they both play almost three quarters of the game on Sunday. I find that remarkable. And they play it at a decent level. Not an all-pro level. You know, but you know, not an 0-16 Detroit Lions level either. They both knew what to do. They both made plays. I think on that that catch and run that should have been ruled out of bounds that Deion Branch made, that 60-something yarder late in the game, when we saw, you know, Deion put a move on Junior. Junior just kind of like, what? You know, that looked pretty sad. But, I mean, on that play, I think just about anybody would have looked sad. And by the way, that call was horrific. I mean, could we not all see that his heel was on the line, and yet the official is telling Coach Belichick that he could not make that determination? What the hell is he looking at?
What, are you kidding me?
Yeah. What the hell is he looking at? It's clear. The guy, Deion's heel is on the line.
Yeah, I was at the game.
And because of that, he should have been down right there. Actually, technically, I'd have to go back and look at it again. Did he get both feet down and in before he pivoted, before he turned? If he didn't, then it would have been an incomplete pass. I'd have to go back and look at it again to determine that. I mean, it's all moot now. The Patriots won the football game. But I'm just saying, you know, this is where, you know, having to rely on instant replay is obviously not a foolproof system. It does not prove anything. The video replay is open to interpretation. That's all it is. That's all it shows. And sometimes that interpretation is not going to go your way. So, therefore, I'm not sure that video replay is really helping us here in the long run. Is it? Do you think it is? I'm not convinced it is. I realize it's here to stay. I don't think it's going anywhere. But when I see stupid calls like that, stupid, why don't we just let the officials call it like they did for the first, you know, seven decades in the NFL? Why don't we just let them take care of it? Before we had instant replay become a part of this game. We seem to do okay without it. I know we didn't have the technology, and now we have the technology. We need to have the technology shoved down our throats or up our noses or you know where. I'm just so disappointed. I like to modernize as much as the next guy. I have been a proponent for using it. I have so many people that I know that have covered this game and have talked about this game who are as old school as I am about the NFL and say that there's no place for, you know, this kind of stuff in the sport. This is where the sport has become so popular because it relies on human error, the chance that you take with human error. That's what makes the game unique. That's what makes it a great game. And when you put electronics into it, you're trying to refine it. And you're trying to make it too perfect, and it's not going to be that way. And you know what? They were right. They were right. We're trying to make it too perfect. And it's not going to work. We're always going to be let down. There are always going to be plays that are left open to a wide range of interpretations, and it's all going to fall upon the shoulders of the referee on the field, and it's his call. And because of that, the games will continue to go on, and you'll go on to be either satisfied or unsatisfied with the call, just like you would have been had an official made that call in real time. If an official had made that call in real time, which, of course, they do, we wouldn't have thought anything about it. But because of the replay, the officials and the league itself are opening themselves up to scrutiny like this, negative scrutiny. I just don't see right now. I mean, maybe I got a case of short-term memory. That's always possible. I don't see any real benefit. So I'm having a kind of a hard time coming to grips with that one. just part of the game. I guess we'll adapt. We'll go along. But if you have some thoughts on that, I'd certainly be welcome to it. Webradio@patriots.com. Let's see. What else did we have coming up from Sunday? Oh, the one thing I think that we've been waiting for all season long, is somebody on this defense to step up and make a play, right? Anybody, at any time, when you can see that an opposing team has got a drive going and you needed somebody to step up and just make a play. Big tackle, big hit, a pick, a fumble recovery, a strip sack, whatever it might be. You need somebody to make a play. Finally, we saw it happen when Brandon Merriweather ran up the middle and sacked Seneca Wallace for that loss on the first play after the two-minute warning of the game. Jarvis Green recovered the ball. Patriots got the ball back, they ran out the clock, and they get a huge road win that keeps them in the running for the AFC East title and potentially the playoffs. Big-time play by Merriweather. We've been waiting for someone to step up and make a play like that on defense all year long. And if we are going to be without a Brewski and or a Will Fork for the remainder of the season, in addition to the other players that we're already missing. We have to have something like that every game. Otherwise, you're probably going to get beat because an opposing team knows that they can move the football on this defense. You have to take more chances. And I was pleased to see that the Patriots' defense took a chance on that play and sent them. They sent the whole house, and it was Merriweather that got to Wallace. You're going to have a team that is going to have to reinvent itself somehow, some way, on the defensive side of the ball over the last 3 weeks in order to keep this run going. All right, we'll get into some nitpicks on a Nitpick Tuesday. And we'll start reading some emails. And don't forget our questions of the day that we've thrown out to you here. Recapping briefly, A, who is your coach of the year thus far in the NFL? B, what did I even ask? What was B again, Dan? What was B again? Can you play back the tape on that one? I'll have to sit here and think about it for a second because I got so wrapped up about the stinking... Got so wrapped up talking about the officials and the video replay and all that kind of stuff. I'm like, all right, what the hell was the other question?
The economy?
Yes, thank you. See, I'm glad
I was paying attention.
I am so happy you were paying attention. Of all days, I'm real happy. How has the downturn in the economy? I'd have figured it out eventually, but it's kind of silly right here because I'm trying to come up with it on top of my head, and I'm lost here. This is what happens when you do a show by yourself. You just kind of like get yourself lost here. How has the downturn in the economy affected you as a football fan, as a Patriots fan, as a sports fan in general thus far? All right, chew on those two questions. We'll get to some nitpicks as well right here inside the playbook.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call, and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you'd need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
Well, we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower. For my son's graduation party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is the ultimate shopping, dining, and entertainment destination in New England. What's your Patriot Place experience?
We took the kids to a movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe and finally went to Red Robin. The burgers were amazing. It was so much fun. Everyone loved it.
We had girls' night out at Patriot Place last weekend. A little shopping, dinner at Davio's. It's just like the one in Boston. And we had drinks at the cutest little wine bar called Tastings.
Experience Patriot Place. A once-in-a-lifetime experience every day.
Honestly, I'm here about once a week. I always find great deals at Christmas Tree Shop and Old Navy, and the shoes at Off-Broadway are unbelievable.
Patriot Place is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough with convenient and free parking.
Bass Pro Shop and Eastern Mountain Sports have everything I need for my camping and hiking trips. And we love CBS Scene Restaurant. They've got about a million TVs, and their outdoor deck looks right into Gillette Stadium. It's so cool.
Log on to patriot-place.com for more information. Patriot Place. Everyone wins.
We know you have a busy day ahead of you, and mornings are always tough to get through. So stop by your local Dunkin' Donuts today and grab a freshly ground, freshly brewed Dunkin' Donuts coffee. It's the perfect thing to get you going in the morning. Dunkin' Donuts coffee is made with real Arabica beans, which give it that rich flavor everybody loves. And while you're there, try the new egg white flatbread sandwich from the new DD Smart Menu. Choose from two delicious varieties, turkey sausage or veggie. Both served on multi-grain bread. With under 300 calories, you can now make a smarter choice for breakfast. So, stop into your local Dunkin' Donuts today and try one with a medium hot coffee for only $3.99. Price and participation may vary, plus applicable taxes. Limited time offer.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac-A-Tack sausages, first down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac-A-Tack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down Franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's, and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine, and Associate Grocers of New England, and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
How long have you been away from San Jose? Brian Lowe, who checks in from Patriots headquarters in San Jose, California. B. Lowe.
What's going on, John? I'm making our bi-monthly or every other month trip to San Jose.
I know. You like Two Gender picked up that music real quick, huh?
Great work. Great
work.
You know, I wouldn't put it, I would never put anything like that past him. That was great. That was a great call right there.
Good stuff. Good stuff.
Play of the day.
So how are things in San Jose today?
I mean, from a weather standpoint, you really don't want to know. I don't think, from what I hear about what's going on or what the temperatures are out there, I don't think you really want to know.
All right.
Since you asked, John, it's sunny and about 60.
Sounds to me like that's still a little nippy for out there.
Yeah, well, you know, yesterday was down to about 50, which was really bothersome. It was, listen, I heard what it is out there, and I feel for you guys.
No, I heard
it's supposed to get a little warmer, right?
Eventually.
Eventually. So
yeah, like,
no, it is
like spring.
It is
in May.
In May.
Yeah, in May.
It is pleasant out here.
Well, that's good. I'm glad that you're having a little decent weather to go along with it. What can you tell us about the latest with anybody and anything? Obviously, Teddy Bruschi, we've heard from several reports, came back this way to have his knee looked at. Is there anything new on that front? And what's the status quo today?
Nothing official. Even on the Bruschi front, actually, Bill Belichick has a conference call scheduled in just a little while, I think. So mm-hmm. maybe we'll hear if he has any update on that. But
right.
I think, in fact, he was even asked on the conference call specifically about Bruschi and whether Bruschi's with the team. He wouldn't confirm that. So I have no other confirmation either. But it doesn't look good for Bruschi, whether or not it's an injured reserve situation or not. It all signs point to him being out at least for this week. But it seems like for the other guys that left the game, Will Fork and James Sanders, that not quite as bad. I'm sure they'll be slowed a little bit in practice this week, and I'm sure we'll see them on the injury report, the ever-expanding injury report. And it's just unbelievable that all these new injuries, all on defense, it seems. I mean, virtually all their injuries are on defense at this stage, aside from, like a Kelly Washington and stuff like that. But, they're just digging deep and deep and deep with some of the guys on the depth chart, and obviously with Colvin and Seau, guys who were in completely different lines of work a week ago. So nothing official on these guys, and as any other week, whether they're out in Foxborough or in San Jose, it'll be the Wednesday injury report that we first get a sense of what they're. Or actually, it'll be at practice, which they practice at about 12:45 local time tomorrow. That'll be the first indication of where these guys stand. But it's getting to a point where you would think that it's hard for them to overcome these injuries, but one way or another, they find a way to do so. And even though they didn't play a great game on Sunday, and they were down for all but the final 2.5 minutes of the game, still this defense kept. The team made sure that they were still in the game, basically in position to still have an offensive drive to win it and a defensive drive to sustain a lead.
Yeah, as we mentioned earlier, I mentioned this a little earlier, we've been waiting all season for someone defensively to step up and make a play when a team looks like it's making a drive, which is what Seattle looked like they were doing. And Brandon Merriweather stepped up on that blitz call and strip-sacked Wallace, and Jarvis Green recovered the ball, and the Patriots were able to make a stand, and that's what they need. They're going to need players to step up in that fashion, especially if, this team is without Bruschi and without Vince Wilfork for any extended period of time.
Well, that's the thing. It was a great defensive play call, and it was excellent execution. I mean, you know, Merriweather just completely. It wasn't much of a contest. And that was a quarterback who played really well. I mean, I was impressed with what Seneca Wallace was able to do.
He did have a good game.
He had an excellent game.
Yeah.
And, you know, an excellent game as a backup quarterback. Now, he's a relatively experienced backup quarterback both this year, and he's had some chances in the past, and he had a very good game. But he was playing behind an extraordinarily inexperienced offensive line, playing with virtually all backups as well. And they've had injury concerns at wide receiver. So,
which made his performance that much better, Brian, to be honest.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. For him to do what he did under those conditions, again, you know, as part of a 2-10 team going nowhere and against a team desperate to have a win, that was an impressive performance. And as far as the Patriots making defensive plays, this one certainly is up there as probably the best specific defensive play game. Changing or game deciding play, but it's kind of been strange this year because even in some of the games where the Patriots defense, specifically the secondary, have looked pretty bad, and I'm thinking about, you know, going all the way back to the St. Louis game. I think it was the even the first game of the year against Kansas City. Some of the players in the secondary have still come up with big interceptions at the end. Even Delta O'Neal, who has had not a real great year, and he's had some really poor performances, but he's had a couple of fourth quarter interceptions that have sort of stalled the drive when the game is still close, that have kept the team in the game. But this Merriweather play will go down. You know, certainly if this season ends up well and gets the team into January. I mean, that play was right near midfield. I mean, Seattle was in Patriots territory and had proven that they could move the ball a little bit. And, you know, fortunately for the Patriots, they had gotten that 2-point conversion just a minute earlier. So if Seattle got into field goal range and only field goal range, a field goal would only have tied the game and they'd still be alive. But for him to make that play and then Seymour, you know, jumping on the ball there, it was great. And that's the play that they'll look back on as maybe a season-altering play.
How about almost having a season-altering play by your kicker?
Oh, well, you know what? You're talking about the fumble that he should have had.
Yes.
Yeah. That play, and at that point in the game, I'm trying to remember exactly where that was. That was in the third quarter where the
right.
Patriots had just cut the deficit to one.
Right.
And that is the type of play I remember. You know, circling that as a wow, that's a missed opportunity right there. You know, he had the ball, and I know he was kicking himself afterwards, and he said after the game, I think, that, you know, if they had lost the game, he would have looked at that as the reason they lost the game, which might be, you know, might not necessarily be true, but, you know, he was there. I mean, he was there, he had the ball, and you'd like to think that he gets on that, but I have a feeling he's not involved as much in some of those, you know, scoop and score drills that the defensive players typically do in practice, but still, you're a football player on the field, you probably should be able to pounce on that, but fortunately for him, they were
right.
able to recover
right.
in the game.
Let me go back to Bruschi for a second, because I know he left the game early in the second quarter. Did you actually see the play? Did you see anything about what happened in particular?
Didn't really see a good look at the play. I think it was another player on the team that knocked
Fell
his
on.
Helmet into
right.
yeah that sort of knocked into his knee and kind of one of those fluky things, but you know, I didn't get a real good look.
Yeah, they didn't show a replay afterwards, and that's what it appeared
yeah.
to be. That, and I'm not sure which even player it was, but it did appear that somebody knocked into his knee.
Yeah, I think it was Richardson. I read that it was Mike Richardson, but you know, hard to say. You know, I certainly didn't see it live. It's hard to see what was going on down there live, but and that's what I heard about it. And unfortunately, that's a knee that he's had. That's been bothering him anyways. He's been on the injured list. He's been questionable the last couple weeks, in fact, which, you know, questionable 50-50. You know, if it's already a knee that has been giving him problems, then that's not a good sign to tweak it in that way. That could be, you know, sort of a fluky thing, but not a great development. And, you know, if some of these reports are true that he goes on injured reserve, you wonder if we've seen the last of Teddy Bruschi, to be honest. I mean, I don't know if... He's certainly a guy who is liable to retire really at any time with all that he's been through on and off the field. You know, and you can almost look at it as he's on borrowed time for his football career as it is. So if he has a serious injury here, you wonder if that's the last of him, which would be too bad.
Yeah, I have to admit that you know, that thought immediately crossed my mind when he didn't come back into the game.
Yeah,
that's the first thing I thought of. I said, "Wow, I wonder if his career could be over," just because we all know that, you know, he's getting a little bit long in the tooth. And
sure.
if anybody could come back, he certainly would. I get the sense that depending upon what happens with his injury, that if it's not a season ending. I'm not yet willing to admit it's a career ending injury because Teddy's the kind of guy I think that would want to give it one more shot with, you know, everybody healthy, you know, kind of like some of these other guys, you know.
And I don't know for sure. I wouldn't say anything for sure. I would agree with you that he's, you know, if he can come back from, you know, if he can come back from an offseason stroke, then he can come back from a knee injury. There's no doubt about it. And, you know, I guess the question is almost similar to Rodney Harrison. You know, Rodney has said in the past that, you know, hey, if I have another season-ending, you know, year-long rehab injury, I just might not really want to put in the grueling work that it takes to come back from it, and I might decide to call an end. And we don't know where Rodney stands right now. Obviously, he's been out, you know, he's on injury reserve, been out for about 2 months now. So hard to say on that front. But with both of these guys, you know, you figure a lengthy injury, you know, it could be the type of thing where they re-examine their careers and their lives and they decide, you know, that's going to be it for me. But we'll see. Long way to go on that. And hey, we're sitting here. I shouldn't even be talking that way. We haven't even heard for sure that his season is over. So we'll wait and see on that. But not great times.
Have you seen any strange looking players out there in California? Anybody ready to throw on a jersey out there?
Well, among the jokes that we've been hearing is, Andre Tippett's going to make a flight out here. Maybe Steve Nelson will come on out. They may need some of these guys. I haven't seen any yet. I'm sure if there is a player that they're interested. But, you know, you make a great point because, you know, you read about all the time in the NFL, usually on Mondays and Tuesdays. Teams have players come in for workouts, to keep their emergency lists going or in certain cases, if there is a player going on injury reserve and they have a roster spot to fill, they'll bring a guy in.
Right.
Well, the Patriots' entire operation is out here. So if they are looking to add a player who maybe, you know, has never been on the team before and they're sort of just taking a look at, rather than flying them out to Foxborough, they're coming out here. And for all we know, that could be happening right now. Now, of course, they do have all of their practice squad guys here as well because, you know, they're practicing. So really the entire practice squad. But off the top of my head, I don't believe they have any practice squad linebackers. In fact, they did up until a couple weeks ago. Vince Redd, who was added to the roster, but even he's hurt now as well. So, they have their practice squad guys, and if they need to add someone at a certain position that they have on the practice squad, that's the easy quick fix. But we'll see if there's any other veterans that are coming into town to take a look and maybe they'll maybe be on the practice field tomorrow. We'll see. They've used up their Roosevelt Colvin Jr. say-out category. I don't know if there's anyone left there. Maybe a Roman Pfeiffer or something. I don't know. He's actually on the West Coast, but we'll see.
Well, the fact is that say-out was in for right at about half of the plays of the entire game. Let's see, I believe I had the total here a moment ago. Colvin was also in for about half of the plays defensively for the whole game, which is, the more I think about it, the more remarkable that really is.
It really is remarkable. And Colvin did is pretty amazing. I mean, he was in a training camp though. So up until 3 months ago, he was working out and going through football activities. Junior Seau hasn't done any of that in 10 months. Since the Super Bowl ended, he has not been involved in football-related activities, going through practices, going through the practice routine and film work and all that. To step right in, and obviously the surfing joke has been played, but it's not even a joke. I mean, he was surfing last Wednesday, chatted with Bill Belichick on the phone, flew out to New England, had to ask who are we playing and who's on the team and where's my locker and all that. Went through one Friday practice, which Friday practices are often more low key and not as physical, and then fly right back across the country and play. Not only did he play, you saw him, you know, calling out defensive signals. He was sort of the one among the players who was communicating with Dean Pease and Matt Patricia on the sideline and then communicating to the players in the huddle. It was like he never missed a beat. It's amazing. It really is amazing what he was able to do and to step right in there. Now, I mean, was the performance an A+? Not necessarily. I mean, we saw what Deion Branch did to him. He flew back into the Patriots sideline right there. So, it wasn't a flawless performance, but to be out there at all is absolutely stunning.
Mm-hmm. What were your impressions of the game overall, and do you have any real nitpicks with what you saw on the field on Sunday?
I would have thought that, Seneca Wallace impressed me. And I certainly thought going in that the matchup on the offensive and defensive lines, the Seattle offensive line and the Patriots' defensive line. I thought that might be something that they could exploit and get after Wallace a little more than they did. But Wallace impressed me with his ability, certainly his ability to run. I mean, I knew going in that he was a quarterback who could run, but I was really impressed with the way he ran and the way he threw the ball too. You know, some of the nitpicks are the same ones we've heard. You know, Deion Branch, getting as open as he was on that first touchdown, you know, shouldn't happen. That play that I referenced a little while ago with Junior Seau getting juked out of his feet,
right,
out of his cleats, you know, Wallace had, you know, Wallace is scrambling all over the place. Deion Branch had already run, you know, 20 yards crisscrossing the field. He catches the ball. He then is able to cross the field and go 64 yards or whatever it was. So there's still some tackling issues, you know, on this team. The pass rush hurt, you know, without Wilfork in there and looking at some of the guys that were out on the field, you know, sort of the edge that the Patriots' defensive line may have had over the offensive line was almost neutralized when Wilfork went out and we're looking at some of the guys who were there on the field. Gary Guyton didn't quite get the type of rush that maybe they would have hoped that he'd get playing on the outside for the first time, but he's an undrafted rookie playing a sort of a new position on that day. So there are nitpicks along those lines, but part of it is just the guys they had on the field. These aren't experienced guys, and they had to, you know, play with who they had. So I definitely give some nitpicks there on the tackling and on the play of the secondary, but they did still do enough to keep the team in the game. You know, right. So those would be a few right there. And
I found myself, Brian, actually, it was harder for me to come up with nitpicks this week, even though, you know, it was a close win over a team that was 2-10 going in. And largely for that very reason, because, you know, you're trying to play with a patchwork team and you lost more people to injury and it was just a difficult situation. But if I had to pick one, I guess my overwhelming nitpick would be not being able to contain, especially since they knew most of the week that Seneca Wallace is going to play, not really being able to contain that guy and shut him down early and make him have to struggle, you know, and make him struggle, because those first two drives he looked like an all-pro quarterback.
Yeah, there's no question. And you want to know something? That's probably the same thing that some opposing teams have been saying about when they play the Patriots and Matt Cassel. How come we couldn't do more damage against this guy who hasn't started in 8 years since he was in high school? How come we couldn't do more to stop this guy from hurting us? It's the same kind of thing. I mean, I'll tell you, I really was impressed by Wallace. I didn't quite realize what he was capable of. But, you know, when you look at this game, and I agree with what you just said about, you know, it's hard to come up with nitpicks because of who's playing. When I look at these two teams' rosters, if I didn't know what their records were this year, I would say these are two pretty even teams.
Yeah.
You know, you look at, they both had backup quarterbacks. They, you know, they both have had, you know, with the Seahawks, it's been more injury problems across the board on offense. With the Patriots, it's more on defense. But they've got some experienced guys, some players who are accomplished players in the league. It's just that the Seahawks have simply been unable to put it together, and they haven't been able to overcome their offensive injuries, and their defense is playing terrible, whereas the Patriots have been able to just kind of plug along and win enough games. So it's almost like these teams actually are even, or more even than their records would show, and the game kind of played that way.
Yeah.
The game kind of played that way. You know, the Seahawks are at home. You know, they're probably a better team than 2-11 would suggest. And, you know, now what the Patriots can hope for is that they play this way against the Jets in a couple weeks, because that's going to be a big game for the Patriots as far as, you know, scoreboard watching goes.
Right, absolutely. So, you know, while it's tough to come up with nitpicks, I mean, it's something that we've been, you know, kind of trying to, you know, do on this team all year long, and that's what we do best around here is, you know, pick nits. That was the one, I think, certainly from the defensive side of the ball. Offensively, we saw, you know, the return of Lamont Jordan in the backfield, and
yep,
yet we didn't really see what I thought was a hard and fast effort to committing to the running game. Now, I realize that a lot of the reason for that has to be because the way the game was played. The Patriots were playing from behind, as you've already noted, almost the entire way until late in the ball game. Still, I thought that there were opportunities where you could have grounded out a little bit and controlled things a little bit more and tried to attack Seattle in the middle. And they didn't really get a chance to do that. They never really let that materialize. Did anybody talk about that after the game?
You know what? Actually, they didn't. And it's an interesting point because they definitely the ratio of run to pass was you know, it was about 25 runs, I think. And Castle right. has 44 attempts. You know, there really wasn't that much talk about the game. And it's an interesting point. But, you know, when you look at some of the, you know, some of the plays that they do, like, you know, short tosses out to Falk in the flat, a lot of Wes Welker's catches were, you know, these little slip screens that are, you know, quick release plays by Castle that, you know, sort of get the ball out into the flat, out into the flat and outside, I think was where they thought maybe they could exploit, some of Seattle's, deficiencies, you know, other than Marcus Trufant, who did a pretty good job against Randy Moss. I think they just thought the outside, you know, outside, you know, short passes out in the flat would be the way to go, and Welker had a great game in that. But, you know, not much talk about the run-pass ratio, but the run wasn't really working well until they really needed it there at the end, and even that wasn't working all that well. But on that drive, you know, Kevin Fox run there right up to the goal line was huge, and you know, you'd hope that maybe they could get it in there on third and one.
Sammy Morris did score a touchdown to give him the lead on the ground. Should we also throw a nitpick the way of Randy Moss just because of the job that Trufant did on him? I mean, he did drop a couple.
He did drop a couple. There were a couple. You know, I still do like the idea of trying to work it deep to Moss and Castle. You know, he's just hasn't been executing those at all. I mean, some of these deep balls are a very small percentage of them. But, you know, there was the one, I think it was a reverse, a fake reverse, and he threw it to Moss, just overthrew him in the end zone. So there was I think the blame, if there is, you know, if there is blame as to why Moss wasn't as involved, I would say it's probably shared. But, hey, Marcus Trufant is a good cornerback who did the job on Moss.
Can we go get Trufant now?
It would be nice to. I believe he either is on his franchise. He was franchised last year.
So.
I don't remember if he was a guy who was franchised and signed a long-term contract, or if he was just on the 1 year franchise tag. I don't know the answer to that, but hey, that's without question.
There's no doubt in my mind that if you're going to go get somebody in the league, he'd be somebody that you'd want to take a look at.
Yeah, that one, him and the one we'll see on Sunday, Asamoah from Oakland.
Right.
You know, hey, without question, I mean, that is the position that they need to most shore up is defensive back. And, you know, I don't think we're going to see too much of, you know, Delpha O'Neal next year or,
We may not see too much of anybody on this team as it presently consists next year.
We might not. No, they definitely have some work to do there. And, you know, probably not going to get too much help from the outside down the stretch this year. But those are a couple of guys, Trufant and Asamoah, who would look good next year.
Well, let's as you kind of brought it up, let's transition here then to Oakland because that's why you guys are in San Jose again.
Yeah,
getting ready to train.
Think Moss has circled this game on the calendar?
I would imagine that he probably has. I would hope that Randy Moss would be you know, figuring prominently in the team's, you know, game plan one way or the other, that they want to stretch the field a little bit. You cannot afford, I don't think in any way, I don't think you can afford to even get behind these guys on Sunday. It doesn't mean that you can't come back and win it, much like they did against Seattle, but I think Seattle on paper is still a better team than Oakland, even though Oakland may have one more win.
I would agree. I would agree that Seattle should be the better team this year. I mean, with Oakland, I would agree with you. I mean, you hate, you know, I don't care who you're playing. You get behind 14-3 on the road, as the Patriots did against Seattle, it's tough to overcome that. They did in this case. Hard to imagine that you could do that twice in a row. But you know what? In some ways, it's similar to their last, you know, West Coast stretch. Now, San Diego, certainly at the time, better team than Oakland is, but the Patriots, you know, their first leg, they beat a team that they should have beaten anyways, after they were coming off of a loss. Last time it was San Francisco, this time it's, you know, it's Seattle, and now they're preparing for a second game on the road. And they were behind early against San Francisco. They're behind early against Seattle. They were able to come out with those wins. You don't want to make that a habit, though. And, you know, Oakland, this is not a very good team. They're probably not going to have Jamarcus Russell, although the way Jamarcus Russell's playing, I don't know if that's a good or bad thing for Oakland. But I would think that much like the Patriots did in the game against San Francisco, I think they're going to look to Moss early. And, you know, Asamoah is a great cornerback, and he's probably going to be on him, and you'd have to figure they're going to try to double him. But I would think that the game plan is get him involved early. He's probably going to want to get involved. He's probably going to be, have this game circled on the calendar.
Sufficiently motivated, right.
And you know what? Here's another one. And you mentioned Lamont Jordan earlier. I think Lamont Jordan's in the same category. He's not the same level of player as Randy Moss. But I think, Randy, I think Lamont Jordan is going to have a chip on his shoulder in this game. He ran hard the other day. You know, he fumbled once, and he only had – how many carries did he have? He only had a couple of carries, a handful of carries, four carries. But on a couple of those, I saw him run hard and get a little bit of extra yardage. I think we might see a big game out of Lamont Jordan. I think we might see him at least factor into the discussion a little bit more and maybe get a few more carries. So I think they have some opportunities here for whatever it's worth, these guys who have a chip on their shoulder for Oakland, you know, to win this game and play strong. And like you said, you know, don't get off to a bad start. I think this is an opportunity where the Patriots defense, whoever's out there, whoever's dressed, whoever's playing, can really get after the quarterback, whichever guy it is, whether it's Russell or Walter, maybe force a few early turnovers. You can't let Oakland, you know, jump out to a 14-3 lead. But I think this is a game that they should definitely be able to handle well. And we'll see. They need, as many of the players have said, it's basically playoff time right now. They need to treat every game as a one and done.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, no doubt about that. Has the local media in the Bay Area, have they said anything at all yet about you know, I don't know, snowball or, you know, the fact that the Patriots are coming to town or any of that kind of stuff? Is any of that?
Not that I've seen yet. To be honest, I haven't really looked around today quite yet. But I'll be getting into some of that. And I'm sure. Hey, you know, you play some of these teams on the West Coast so infrequently that all that stuff is sure to come up. The snowball game. You know, even that first game of the 05 season when the Oakland came out to New England, Patriots beat them. And certainly the Moss and to a lesser extent the Jordan stuff. That's all going to be coming out, I'm sure. You know, maybe we'll even hear Al Davis pipe up this week. who knows? There's plenty of storylines. If the two teams were both in contention, it would make it even more of a game, even more storylines. But as it is, there are plenty of them, and it should be an interesting week.
Al Davis bring out the Patriots tampered with Randy Moss story again, maybe?
Oh, I'm sure he will. I'm sure he'll bring all of it out.
All right, so what are you going to cover on Patriots today for us?
We've got a little bit of we've got an interview with actually LaKeven Smith on today's show from out here. He factored into the game, you know, especially with Vince Wilfork out and Ty Warren not being in the game. He's sort of a guy, you know, this is what this team does: drafts guys, you know, late in rounds, and you know, if they see potential in them, they keep them around either on the practice squad or just as a reserve guy, and hope that in year two, three, four, that some of these guys are ready to step in and make a seamless impact. And you know, LaKeven Smith, did he have any big game-changing plays? No, but he was part of he was in there and did an okay job. And so we chatted with him and talked a little bit more, too, about Junior Seau's performance and what he was able to do in coming back from being a surfer, a pro surfer, and a dad out on the West Coast. So talking a little bit about that, and then by tomorrow we'll transition right into the game against Oakland. They'll be practicing out here in San Jose State. We'll certainly have full coverage of these practices and check in on all the injury news as well.
All right, good stuff, B-Lo. Hey, thanks for checking in out there. It's greatly appreciated.
No problem. Always good chatting with you, and maybe we'll see you live next week.
All right, brother. Sounds good.
All right, John.
Brian Lowe reporting from San Jose State University, where the Patriots are headquartering this week in between their back-to-back West Coast games at Seattle and at Oakland coming up this next Sunday. And by the way, Eric Scalavino from Patriots Football Weekly will be checking in for us tomorrow from San Jose as the Patriots practice tomorrow. And so we'll get the latest from Erica out in San Jose in tomorrow's show, also on Thursday's show as well. So we'll have a San Jose presence all week long right here right here inside the playbook. Web radio at patriots.com. The email address, 508-543-7482. The telephone number, two thoughts of the day. Number one, who is your NFL coach of the year thus far? Is Bill Belichick in the running? Should he be? That's topic number one. And topic number two, how has the downturn in the economy affected you as a sports fan, as a football fan, as a Patriots fan in particular? How has it affected you thus far? Web radio at patriots.com. Fire off those answers. We're going to get to some emails coming up right here inside the playbook.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
Always we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower. For my son's graduation party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com. Patriot Place in Foxborough is the ultimate shopping, dining, and entertainment destination in New England. What's your Patriot Place experience?
We took the kids to a movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe and finally went to Red Robin. The burgers were amazing. It was so much fun. Everyone loved it.
We had girls' night out at Patriot Place last weekend. A little shopping, dinner at Davio's. It's just like the one in Boston. And we had drinks at the cutest little wine bar called Tastings.
Experience Patriot Place. A once-in-a-lifetime experience every day.
Honestly, I'm here about once a week. I always find great deals at Christmas Tree Shop and Old Navy, and the shoes at Off-Broadway are unbelievable.
Patriot Place is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough with convenient and free parking.
Bass Pro Shop and Eastern Mountain Sports have everything I need for my camping and hiking trips. And we love CBS Scene Restaurant. They've got about a million TVs, and their outdoor deck looks right into Gillette Stadium. It's so cool.
Log on to patriot-place.com for more information. Patriot Place. Everyone wins. We know you have a busy day ahead of you, and mornings are always tough to get through. So stop by your local Dunkin' Donuts today and grab a freshly ground, freshly brewed Dunkin' Donuts coffee. It's the perfect thing to get you going in the morning. Dunkin' Donuts coffee is made with real Arabica beans, which give it that rich flavor everybody loves. And while you're there, try the new egg white flatbread sandwich from the new DD Smart Menu. Choose from two delicious varieties, turkey sausage or veggie. Both served on multi-grain bread. With under 300 calories, you can now make a smarter choice for breakfast. So, stop into your local Dunkin' Donuts today and try one with a medium hot coffee for only $3.99. Price and participation may vary, plus applicable taxes. Limited time offer.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
It's hour number two inside Patriots Playbook for a Tuesday. Pats and the Oakland Raiders, 4:15 Eastern time on Sunday from the Black Hole in Oakland. Think they'll be geeked? Yeah, I would imagine so. They'll be stoked. They'll be ready to go. They don't forget. They'll still be wailing and railing on about, Snowball and all that kind of stuff. But I look forward to it. Should be an interesting challenge. It's always fun when you play a team that is as despised as much as the Raiders and or Al Davis is around the
league. Welker is your favorite player.
Welker is your favorite player?
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to play that loud.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you played that one out loud. It's called Put It in Cue. That's all right. All right, let's go to a couple of emails here. Again, the questions of the day had to do with a couple of things. Number one, who is your, to this point in time, through 14 weeks of the NFL regular season, who's your coach of the year? And I bring that up only because I think that it may very well be, could certainly be in the discussion for Bill Belichick and his best coaching job ever. I'm not just spewing hyperbole here. When you consider the injuries that the Patriots have, they're in the top 3 to 5 in terms of injuries in the NFL, in terms of most affected, I think, amongst, you know, teams in the league this year. And if this team somehow finds a way to go 11-5, I don't believe he'll get it, but should he get consideration for it? If not Coach Belichick, then who? So that's why I'm asking, who's your NFL coach of the year to this point in time, number one? And number two, the NFL laid off 150 employees today out of the more than 1,100 employees that they have in this country, in New York and in their NFL Films headquarters and their production facilities as well in New Jersey and in California. And it appears that the economic downturn has also affected the National Football League, at least for the first time we're, you know, getting wind of this. So I'm curious to note how the economic downturn has affected you as a consumer of sports, as a consumer of the Patriots, as a consumer of football. How has it affected you? You can do it anonymously if you like. Doesn't make any difference one way or the other, but I'd like to know if it is affecting you, how so? webradio@patriots.com. This email comes from Josh, or actually this comes from Sawyer in Waterloo, who says, I see on Reese's blog, if the Pats and the Dolphins both win out, that Miami will win with the third tiebreaker. But I took the tiebreaker that states best winning percentage against common opponents to mean all common opponents, not just the ones in the division. I believe that's correct. Isn't common opponents within the division the same as divisional records? Yeah. He has us both at 2-2. I think it would be overall common opponents, which would make us 10-2 and Miami 9-3. I think it is overall common opponents. At least I'm led to believe that, because record within the division is one separate tiebreaker unto itself. That's actually the first it's the second tiebreaker after head to head. If you split the two games, then the next record, next tiebreaker you go to is record within the division. So it would have to be all common opponents. All common opponents. Let me see. I was able to go on and find a couple of things here in terms of where we are with that. Give me two shakes of a rat's tail here. See if I can figure all that stuff out. The tiebreakers going into this week anyway. The tiebreaking procedures. I'll double check on that here in a second. Let's just put it this way. Myriad possibilities right now. Even with 3 weeks still to go, there's a ton of ways that this thing can turn. Or I think you probably have to sort of the first thing you have to do is make sure that you win yours. If you win yours, then I think you're going to be in pretty good shape. I do believe, however, that you pretty much have to feel like either Miami or New York has to lose somewhere. I don't think Baltimore is going to lose. That's just my own personal impression, but you know, again, they have a fairly stout schedule, at the tail end here. So, to me, that's going to be that might be a little bit more difficult. Let's see here. If the Patriots and Jets both went out to go 11-5, the tiebreaker does go to New York because they would own the better division record. That means the Jets would be 5-1 in the division. The Patriots would be 4-2. If Miami wins out to finish 11-5, they would hold the tiebreaker edge over the Patriots because of a better conference record. Conference record. If Baltimore wins 2 of 3 to finish 11-5, they would win the tiebreaker over the Patriots because of a better conference record, which, again, is the third tiebreaker. If the Colts win a couple of more games to finish 11-5, they would own a tiebreaker, of course, since they beat the Pats head-to-head. If Pittsburgh wins one of the last three and finishes 11-5, well, they would obviously win the tiebreaker because of head-to-head. Patriots, yes, they must run the table. But I think, I think you realize that the Patriots are still, even if they run the table, they're still going to need some help to get in. Somebody needs to lose somewhere along the way. And I, for all practical purposes, I think we see it right now need to sort of tune out the whole wild card race, because I think the Patriots' best bet and maybe only bet to get in is going to be with the AFC East Championship. And I don't know how, you know, unreliable you think that may be, but, you know, as far as the wild cards are concerned, you're looking at right now Indianapolis and Baltimore.
I think wild cards are best shot.
Why is that?
because Baltimore has a tough schedule coming up.
Well, I just, you know, I mentioned that. I realize Baltimore's a tough schedule, but Baltimore's also playing very well. So I'm
this is true.
I'm not ready to say that even though Baltimore has the toughest road to hoe, it's clear that either way, the Patriots are still going to need some help. Baltimore's going to have to lose, you know, two of those last three. They got to lose two of three. So if you think wild card may be the route to go, then you need to root for Baltimore to lose two out of their last three. I don't think the Colts are going to lose again. I mean, they've got Detroit this week. It ain't happening this week. And obviously they hold the head-to-head over the Patriots. So I think that's one spot that you can pretty much kiss off. I don't think they're going to lose their last two in that regard. They would also have to lose two of three. So the help is going to come, I think, the best shot is going to come within the division. So it's the Jets and the Dolphins, the Ravens, the Colts, the Steelers that all control their postseason destiny by winning out. And as I've got another source here, Mike Reese, I know, put that up on his Reese's Pieces blog on Boston.com. The Patriots, as we know and as we've stated already, are going to need some help. They do not control their destiny right now for the postseason, even if they win out. Even if they win out.
They do if the Dolphins and the Jets tie that last game.
Well, if they tie the last game, and you realize how likely that possibly
is. If you're allowed to tie in the NFL.
Oh, man, you know. Yeah, really. Didn't we kind of decide that already? Aren't we now not exactly, you know, allowing ties in the NFL? I don't think we're allowed to do that anymore now, are we? Kind of what I thought. Wow. All right, so anyway, that's the playoffs as it now stands. You got to win. And you got to keep winning, and you're going to have to hope for some help along the way. That's what it boils down to as far as the Pats are concerned. All right, let's get back inside the inbox here then. This one goes to okay, this one comes from Donald, who says, firstly, congrats to the Pats for the win on the weekend. Hope Vrabel and Bruschi are okay. He says, I've been a Pats fan now for a few years. I try to watch every game, even if it means going to extremes like watching it or listening to it over the internet when it's not broadcast on cable, which is frustrating because it could be in the middle of a play and my screen freezes. Next thing I see is Wes lying on his back, not moving, you know, like in the game against Pittsburgh. I realize that. All right, he says, I stumbled onto a treasure find a few months back when I was looking up some Pats news, and since then I have been an avid listener. My college exams start in 2 months and two more months, and I know that I should be studying, but here I am. That being said, I have questions for you. Number one, my brother and I noticed that over the past few games this season, a lot of the touchdowns against us have been in some way blamed on Delta O'Neal, and I'm kind of starting to believe this. I'm wondering what your opinions are on this. Well, first of all, Delta O'Neal came to the Patriots as an afterthought anyway, because the Patriots had, you know, trouble at the corner, and because the guys that they drafted this last year, the rookies they drafted, they just, you know, in Wilhite and Wheatley got hurt. Wilhite wasn't deemed ready yet. I'm not even sure they thought that Wheatley was ready yet, but he was out there and he ended up getting hurt. They needed bodies, and here's a guy that had spent, you know, 8-9 years in the NFL, experienced. Now, he was cut by Cincinnati, so I don't know what that tells you. It should tell you something, right? But the fact is, though, is that he came in at least knowing how to play the position. He plays receivers way too soft for my liking, and I think it's because he's just making sure that he doesn't get beat. He doesn't have the foot speed or the quickness that he might have had 3 or 4 years ago. So he gets beat in a lot of underneath routes simply because he plays too soft on the receivers. Again, I don't disagree. The fact is he's been getting beat on some scores. What else are you going to do? We're really kind of at that stage now. He also says, I know it's not Pats related, but I was looking up last week on the net to see who the highest paid player this year in the NFL was. It spat out Big Ben for the Steelers. My question is, do you think this is valid? And are wages calculated by a player's previous year stats or what? Well, I think all wages are calculated based on a player's performance to the time up to the time that he signs the contract. So a player is worth whatever he can get. I realize that sounds like a little bit of a cop-out, but frankly, that's exactly what it is. If you have a big year and you're in a contract year, then in the off-season, you are going to demand and probably receive based on what your performance was the past year. and you're probably going to get a multi-year deal. So let's say you get into year three of a four-year deal, and your numbers have, let's just say, dwindled since year one. Is it valid what you're making? Well, the average fan, I think, would say no. But again, you have to look at it a little bit further. Of course it's valid because it's based on when you signed it. Wages are not always calculated by a player's previous year, as you say, Donald, unless, of course, you're in a contract year. Then, of course, that's exactly what they're done. They're calculated on that previous year for the most part. That's what players want, and that's usually what owners give them. So there you go. I hope that that somewhat answers your questions. Ron says, does the 2008 New England Patriots now have the record for most players on injured reserve in a single season? No, I don't believe that's the case. I saw that somewhere earlier today. I think, like I said, I believe they're in the top three or four in terms of injuries right now, in terms of starters on IR and things, but I don't believe that they are, I don't believe they have the record, no. But now, again, let's hold on to that. They might be before the end of this week if we don't get good news on Brewski or Wilfork. There are two potential starters right there that could also be on the shelf. Defensively, that would put Brewski, Wilfork, Thomas, Harrison, who else did we lose in the defensive backfield? Wheatley, who did he start? I think he has a start this year. I think you're looking at, I think you're looking at five potential players that would have started for this defense. Ty Warren. He's not on IR, but he hasn't been eligible the last couple of weeks. He's got this lingering groin problem that isn't allowing him to get back onto the field yet. Let's just go with this. Count the healthy starters that are there right now for New England that were there at the beginning of the year. One, two, three. That's all I can come up with. If you're looking at the four. If you're looking at the 3-4 defense, I think you can look at Seymour, which is a little bit of a surprise, actually. You're looking at Vrabel. You're looking at Mayo and Ellis Hobbs. Who have I missed? Four guys that seem to have somehow avoided the injury bug thus far. And, of course, those guys have all had their own dings anyway, right? You know, they've missed plays. They haven't missed games, per se, but they've missed plays. Four. That's extraordinary. And, I mean, you know, as frustrated, I think, as we all are over, you know, the team's inability defensively to make stops in key situations, I think, again, you have to look at the big picture and you have to look at that very reason that I just mentioned. Who is back there? Who's making the stops? Who's playing? Not who you thought was going to be playing when this year started. Far from it. Doesn't make the frustration any easier to take, though, does it? Nah. Oh, not at all. Not at all. John in South Carolina says, looking to the future is just a way to keep from focusing on the Steelers manhandling us. I think the Pats played well, and I'm surprised how well the defense played in the second half of the game against Seattle, especially when you consider the bench is getting very thin. My question is, if Brewski does not play, who are the linebackers? Seau, Mayo, Woods, Guyton, Izzo. I think you pretty much nailed it. Obviously, Colvin. So that's really what you have in terms of linebackers. Seau, Mayo, and Pierre Woods is out. No, he's not in there. He's got a broken jaw right now. He's not been put on IR. But he's certainly hurt, and he's not playing anytime soon. So they'd be Seau, Mayo, Guyton, Izzo, Colvin. You got five guys. Right now, if Brewski doesn't play, you've got Seau and Mayo in the middle, and you've got or Guyton. What are you doing for the other outside linebacker, along with Mike Vrabel? I mean, who plays the other outside linebacker? Do you really have one? You don't. Colvin. So you'd put Colvin and you'd put Vrabel on the outside, and you'd put Mayo, Guyton, and Sale, those three revolving on the inside for the other two spots. That's what you have. That's your linebacker core. Ta-da! Wow, shocking, isn't it? That's what you have. James in Roanoke Rapids, North Carolina, says, John, to make it clear as to how hard it is for the Patriots to make the playoffs, this is what needs to happen. Says, one, clearly the division title will be easier to achieve. Well, this is what I happen to agree with. All they will need to do is win out and then have both the Dolphins and the Jets lose at least once more. That will give them the division title. If they win out and the other two teams do also, I don't think the Patriots can win the tiebreakers. And as we've already suggested here, James, and you are backing up here, no, they cannot. They lose the tiebreaker in both instances at 11-5 with the Jets, and they lose the tiebreaker, it would appear, at 11-5 with the Dolphins, although I think that still may be subject to some sort of conjecture. But it doesn't appear to be the case right now. He says, number two, the wild card would be even harder to achieve because they would have to win out and then need so much help it is near impossible to outline what needs to happen in this email, he says. Yeah, that's very true, James. Thank you for writing and confirming that as we kind of sort of piece this together. And I think we all realize that this is going to change probably weekly, almost daily, but certainly weekly. It's going to change again. This time next week we'll probably be talking about a different set of standards and scenarios for Patriots team if they win this game against Oakland this next Sunday. If they lose this Sunday, I think we'll all be writing the postmortem next week. And then we'll be going sort of through the motions next week for Arizona and what would appear to be the final home game of the regular season. Certainly the regular season, maybe the final home game of the year. And then the regular season finale at Buffalo the following week. And that might do it, kids. So you can see there certainly is there's a sense of urgency in trying to get the job done this week against Oakland to keep the hopes alive and then realize that you're going to need some help. I think I do believe, as many of us have already opined here this season, that in light of the injuries, that this somehow is going to manage to find a way to go down to the last week of the season, and it will all hinge on whether or not the Patriots can win in Buffalo in the last week. I think it's going to come down to that. They may still need help from someone in that last week. But I think the Patriots will somehow remain alive until the last week, because I do think that they'll win this game. The Arizona matchup next week scares me greatly because, Kurt Warner is having an MVP type of year. Those big physical receivers that the Cardinals have are just a horrible matchup for the Patriots defensively, and I think everybody realizes that. And, well, I'm sure that we will spend a tremendous amount of time talking about those matchups in particular next week before the Cardinals come into town. And, by the way, the Cardinals are already AFC West champs, so they have the luxury of resting guys if they want to. They don't need any more wins. They've already clinched the West Division in the NFC. Shocking, isn't it? Arizona Cardinals, division champs. But that's who's coming in here next week. And we'll deal with it then, I guess. But James just sort of does, he really kind of underscores the fact that, this is a Patriots going to have to win, and they're still going to need some help. I figured I would get a response from strippers. He says, the downturn in the economy has not affected my viewing of games or my listening or online subscriptions. It does make it, however, a little bit harder to travel to South Florida to see my Sooners in the BCS title game.
Oh, my God, that is funny.
Too bad we burned what I had to say about you earlier, strippers. Too bad. TG in New Jersey. John, it was Seymour who recovered Merriweather's fumble. Was it? Okay. All right. I misspoke. As far as instant replay, go check the NHL. They do it right. Well, I don't know that anybody does it right, TG. I really don't. I'm not convinced anybody does it right. And again, I was an early proponent when replay came into play. I was an early proponent of technology. You know, we had to wake up and smell the coffee and be 21st century because the sport is 21st century. And, we need to grow with the game. But now that we've had it for a few years, I'm just not sure what overall good it's doing. I think it's just adding another layer of, bullcrap we got to get through, man. Let's play the game. You know, let the officials try to make the play, because it's still subject. I mean, if you're telling me that a replay is as obvious as Deion Branch's heel on the line, which it was. Can we all agree on that, by the way? Can we all agree on that? His heel was on the line based on the replays that we all saw on network national bleeping television. And you're telling me that the official doesn't see the same thing that we see? They have the ability to see the same thing we see. Did he not push the right buttons? You're telling me that he still could not tell if his foot was not on the line or not? If that's the case, then why do we have replay? He might as well just go with his gut instinct, because that's all you're doing here. You're going on your gut instinct to make that call. He can't overturn it. Why? Well, because I don't know. Because I can't tell. Well, you couldn't tell it in real time, and if you can't tell it looking at it a million times thereafter, then what the hell good is it doing? That's the point. How far advanced does the technology take us? Does it improve the sport? Negligible. Negligibly, it does. That's what I'm thinking right now. TG says, Coach of the Year candidates. I say it's between Sperano with the Finns and Mike Smith with the Falcons. He says, no Belichick. Everybody hates him. Well, I can't really say that I disagree with that. You're probably right about that. Even though this still, again, if the Patriots end up 11-5, whether they make the playoffs or not, it still goes down. I think it should go down in the books as one of the best all-time coaching jobs when you consider what the Patriots have lost this year. There's no doubt in my mind that they've been able to, you know, spit and baling wire and duct tape their way to 11 wins. That's unbelievable. We all did say 10-6, 11-5 was capable for this team after Brady went down in week one. But I don't think anybody foresaw the rash of injuries to follow thereafter. And yet this team is still managing to keep up with my expectations and maybe even yours. And that's the kind of season that this football team is having. It's pretty cool. I hope that at some point, you know, you always hear the phrase stop and smell the roses. I hope you're able to stop and appreciate a little bit what this team has done this year, even though it might not ultimately mean a playoff spot or, you know, a Super Bowl spot or even a championship for that matter. If this team somehow wins a division title, the AFC East crown, even though it'll be the sixth straight, this one should mean more than all the others put together based on the adversity that this team had to go through to get there. I'm kind of rating things here, but in my own opinion, I think it would be a great tribute to the coaching staff and to the players on this team for keeping it together like they have. TG also says MVP, either Wes Welker or Bernard Pollard, depending on your opinion of the Patriots. Good stuff. Excellent. Here we go. John in Fayetteville, Georgia says, Coach Sperano has done an incredible job at Miami, but I think the honor of best coach has to go to Tom Coughlin. Think about how much he has turned that team around from a year ago. He was on his way out. The players were griping about all the rules he was putting on them, and the media was all over him. Since then, he has won a Super Bowl. The players have bought into his system, and they are the Super Bowl favorites this year, and now he is dealing with the Plexico Burris thing. Unless the Giants have a huge collapse, he will take Coach of the Year. And he says Bill Belichick is a very close third. So I'm assuming then, John, you're placing Sperano at Miami second in that derby. Okay, plausible arguments. My own personal estimation is, I'm probably going to miss out on somebody here that really deserves it. My own personal estimation here is that Sperano's going to win it, especially if Miami, he might have already clinched it. Miami's 8-5. You know, now if they lose their last three to finish 8-8, that might take a little luster off it. But when you look at it, that would still be a 7-game improvement over what they did last year. So he probably has already clinched it. If it's an 8 or a 9-game improvement, if they get to 9-10, or goodness, it's possible they could get to 11 wins. It's a slam dunk for Sperano. It just is. What it tells me is that Miami was nowhere near as bad as 1-15 would indicate last year. No way. And just a few tweaks And Bill Belichick probably – I mean, not Bill Belichick. Bill Parcells probably part of the reason why he took the gig anyway when he got there. He probably said, you know what? This team personnel-wise isn't as bad as I thought it might be. And he brought in a coach that could tweak these players just the right way and see what he could get out of it. I think he kind of thought of Sperano as an extension of him anyway. And this is what, you know, this is what Parcells, this is what he does. He did it here. He's doing it in Miami. They've got a foundation laid now. And maybe it's just coming along a little bit more quickly than even he thought they could. My guess is Sperano has to be the leader. You had some good thoughts there, John, on Tom Coughlin, but just because of the fact that they won last year, I'm not sold that he'll get the honor this year. I realize they're 11-2, and you know they've still got a great record and probably will win the NFC. I'm going to say right now, second place, wow. I'm going to say John Harbaugh at Baltimore. And again, just because I realize that everybody thought Baltimore would probably have a pretty good defense this year, but I don't think they thought that a guy like, you know, Joe Flacco would come along as perhaps quickly as he had. And because Flacco has certainly turned out to be a better than just an average quarterback right now, he's managing, kind of like what we expected of Matt Castle, he's managing Baltimore to wins. Now, this could all blow up in my face because Baltimore does have the toughest schedule of the last 3 weeks on down the line of any of the contenders in the AFC. But if Baltimore makes the playoffs, Harbaugh's going to be right there, especially just because he's a first-year coach. And that's why I think Sperano's got it right now in the clubhouse. But Harbaugh's going to be there. Mike Smith in Atlanta is another great choice, simply because nobody expected the Falcons to be any good. And, you know, they could easily end up in the playoffs. They're leading for a wild card spot, I think, as we speak. Beyond that, I would have to say, you know, Belichick has to be, at least when you take in consideration, you know, teams and what they've lost, he probably comes up after, my guess would be, some order of Sperano, Harbaugh, and Mike Smith. That would be at least just my outward guess, based on the injuries. I'd probably put him ahead of Eric Mangini, although Mangini is going to get some mention for that, probably from New York media, but Mangini's going to get some mention for it. I'm not sure anybody else does at this venture. You know, Tomlin might at Pittsburgh, but that would be the only other one that I could really kind of see right now. I mean, nobody else right now really just jumps out. So there you go. There's probably four, maybe five candidates that I think right now would be head and shoulders above, you know, the others in the NFL in terms of, you know, coach of the year. And we've still got 3 weeks to play out. And my guess would be that unless the Dolphins fall flat on their face, that would be the only way that anybody else would catch up and pass a guy like Tony Sperano in Miami. All right, what else do we have left over from Seattle? Anything? Any? We have any good news? It all seems like it's been bad news. It just, you know, I've tried to make a more concerted effort here, kids. When we get to the tail end of our programs, I like to end things a little bit more on an upbeat note. I'm generally consider myself to be an enthusiastic, energetic, upbeat kind of guy. Because why? Because these are games we're playing here. We're supposed to be having some fun talking about a game, talking about the sports. And the games that people play that we follow as fans. And so, I realize that there are always downsides to stories and there are always negatives. And you've got sports in the courts and you've got injuries and you've got, you know, bad news. And you got, you know, the economy to talk about, as we've touched on a little bit today, and all this stuff going on. So I try to make a little bit of concerted effort to make sure that in every show we slip in something good, something that maybe even is unexpected, something maybe even that even in your daily duty of surfing the net, you just weren't aware about. When it comes to the Patriots, you know, we try to teach you something here if we possibly can. I realize a lot of this stuff is regurgitated, that you probably have seen it somewhere on the net at some point in time. But we try to come up with just a couple of things that, you know, create some thought and you say, oh, I didn't know that. Or, hey, wow, that's pretty cool. And, hey, that's good news. All right, so a couple of things for you. Number one, Bill Belichick. His 150th career win as a head coach this past Sunday against Seattle. He's had 135 of them in the regular season. He's had 15 playoff wins. So his career record is now 150-90. And before you do the math, that's about 63% if you round it off. He is the 17th head coach in NFL history to record 150 more wins or more wins, 17th. His winning percentage right now is now fourth amongst all coaches with 150 or more wins. And then I don't know if that comes as a surprise or not, but he trails only George Halas, Don Shula, and Joe Gibbs in that category of winning percentage with 150 or more wins. And yes, that 150-90 record does include his below 500 record as head coach of the Cleveland Browns for 5 years. So you can see now, you know, without a 7 or 8 game below 500 record as coach in Cleveland, how much better his record really is in New England. But that's still some pretty good company for Coach Belichick. Fourth in winning percentage amongst all coaches with at least 150 career victories. The Patriots won their 14th consecutive regular season game against a team from the NFC. So, you know, other than that little minor glitch called the Super Bowl last year, which would be considered postseason in this instance, the Patriots have pretty much dominated the NFC over the last decade. They, you know, have not lost a regular season game to an NFC team since they lost in Carolina in September of 2005 to the Panthers. The other note, which I'm sure you're probably aware of now because we talked about it last week, but this team now is 18-1 in games following a loss since the beginning of 2003. And it was that stat last week at 17-1, and that stat alone as a reason why I picked the Patriots to beat the Seahawks. I said, until somebody shows me that they can beat them, that this team has always found a way, for the most part, to be resilient. So I'll stick with them until somebody, you know, knocks them out. Seattle got close, but they couldn't quite do it. They got that big knockout sack from Brandon Merriweather late in the game to ice it after the two-minute warning. So the game went down a little further toward the end than I thought it might. I originally thought that Patriots might score somewhere around the midway through the fourth quarter and get it to a two-possession game, two-score game, and Seattle would not be able to catch up. And it was only a one-possession game, and it was only a field goal. And Seattle was driving, and they were about 10 yards away from a potential try at a potential field goal that would have tied it and sent it into overtime until Merriweather came up with that sack, strip sack, and the recovery there by Seymour. So there you go. Those are a couple of positive things to end with. Also, Matt Cassel. This is really, I think, lost, you know, in the cover of what happened. Cassel led his second career fourth quarter comeback. It was a 21-13 deficit going into the fourth quarter. He led a fourth quarter comeback, obviously, against St. Louis back in October after trailing by 3 in the fourth quarter. The Patriots trailed by 8, got the ball with 41 seconds left in the third, and then started a 10-play, 68-yard drive that ended in a Gostkowski field goal, 27 yards. Cut the lead to 21-16 with 12:19 left in the game. Then after a Seattle punt, Cassel then led the Patriots on a 14-play, 71-yard drive that took better than 6 minutes off of the clock. Patriots, by the way, did you know this? Patriots lead the league in 10-play-plus drives this year. No team in the NFL has more 10-plus-play drives than the Patriots. That's right. He did break the 3,000. Cassel broke the 3,000-yard mark in passing. He's the seventh Patriots player in history of the team in 49 years to throw for 3,000 yards or more in a single season. The other six, can you name them? Well, Brady, Bledsoe, Grogan, probably got those three, right? How about the other three? Tony Eason? Can you get the other two? Hugh Millen? Yeah. And Vito Babe Parilli. They are the class of seven that have thrown for 3,000 yards or more in a single season as a Patriots quarterback. I had one more that I wanted to bring out, I think. And let's see, do I have it here still? Oh, yeah, here it is. Stephen Gostkowski. It's kind of a silly one, but fact is, shows the guy's got some leg here. The 50-yard field goal that he hit to cut the Seattle lead to 7-3 late in the first quarter, his longest of the season, and the second longest boot of his career. So now he is perfect in his Patriots career from 50 yards or more. He's 3-for-3. He had the 50-yard kick of the 2006 divisional playoffs at San Diego. So he's 3-for-3 from 50 yards plus as a Patriots kicker. You know what? I mean, all that tells me is that he won't be afraid to step up and hit that 50-plus yarder when you need it in crunch time. That's always good to know because, frankly, over these last 3 weeks, they may need Steve Gostkowski to win a game. They just might need it. Hey, coming up inside the playbook tomorrow, we will have Eric Scalavino from Patriots Football Weekly, who is situated out there in San Jose, along with Brian Lowe. And Eric is going to join us on the program to give us the very latest on what the Patriots are doing workout-wise at San Jose State in their preparations for the Oakland Raiders. So we'll update the injury report as best as we can for you tomorrow, and he'll give us the latest on what the players and what the coaches are talking about out there and what the media might be talking about as well as Oakland gets ready for the Patriot invasion on Sunday. We'll probably also begin, I know we're going to try to check in with a couple of the media members that, that cover the Raiders out in the Bay Area as well tomorrow, but I know that we've got several conference calls scheduled for tomorrow as well. The only question is whether or not we're able to get them to you here in time for tomorrow's show, and if not, then it'll be for Thursday. But we want you to listen to the players as well tomorrow because, frankly, you know, hey, every game counts, right? Where have you heard that cliche before? It is more so this week than at any other week of the season. The next game is the biggest game. Gosh, you know, if we sat here long enough, we could probably come up with, what, six, seven, eight, nine, a dozen or more well-worn, trite, used cliches about what next week means, about what this Sunday means to the team. We'll probably end up using all of them before this week is out. Thanks to B-Lo for checking in from San Jose. Thanks to you for listening into the program, and Dan Tugender as well from running the controls as he always does. Same Pat's time, same Pat's channel manana, kids.